Welcome to Subthreads, a Greater Green Bay Society of the Llama audio experience. I'm your host, Nick Wattier, making a very different episode from what you've heard in the last two installments. First off, let me apologize. I did not have an episode last week, and that led some people to some questions. So today, I'm going to give you a little bit of a different experience. Something that you're not typically going to hear out of subthreads, unless you guys tell me you really like it. Today, I'm off the cuff. I'm unresearched, and I am speaking as myself in my personal voice and my personal opinions, not covering the subthreads as I normally would. Some things happened this week that I feel I need to address. I actually had a show 3 written for last week. I'm a little disappointed that I didn't record it, but the reality of my life and my timeline right now is, you know, I'm a manager at Camera Corner. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I am the event production manager. I handle all of our rentals and equipment and live event production services. We help a lot of nonprofit organizations and whatever else. That is time consuming, so I can't promise ever that I'm going to have an episode every week. I'm also a father to a 2-year-old girl, actually 2.5 this week. So that's exciting. And realistically, I make this show when all the work is done and the rest of the house is asleep. So I might not get an episode every week, but what I do promise is when I'm covering comments and news, I kind of have to be up to date. So I'm never going to write an article and carry it over to next week. If I write it and I don't get to record it, it's going to get thrown away because the comments are going to change between the writing and the recording. And I don't want that to happen. But yeah, anyways, this week was very eventful for anybody that's following the Green Bay Society of the Llama. If I can pull it up here while I'm recording, membership growth was through the roof. We got a lot of exposure. Let's just type this in quick. Again, like I said, not really prepared for today. I'm just talking. Here we go. Group insights and new members. Well, that's 28 days. Let's just look at the last 7 days. According to the Facebook-y algorithm-y thing, 32 members in the last 7 days. That's a pretty rapid expansion. And no, I'm not going to go back and re-record this because I want you guys to know it's authentic and it's real. And it's being recorded as I'm thinking of it. I wrote down a couple notes about things I want to talk about. The first one actually was a question from some people about the online giving that we have. I don't know how, but like in 3 or 4 different places over the last 2 weeks, we were accused by different people of being owned by the Press Gazette, which is really, really weird for me to hear. There is no owner of the Greater Green Bay Society of the Llama, so to speak. Jason Jerry, myself, Nicholas Wattier, and the Green Bay Llama, who, as far as I know, can only be logged into by Jason Jerry, are the only 3 administrative accounts. As of today, I'm recording around 5 p.m. here on January 19th, 2019. We're the only 3 administrators as of right now. And one of them is, or 2 of them, are the same people. There is no ownership beyond that. There is no funding behind that. Of course, you know, we've made some investments in technology. I have some equipment that I've used and I've given some things to Jason for use. Jason and his ex-wife, Sherry, they have, you know, invested in his Mevo camera so he can do live streaming, and his cell phone bills to be able to handle the bandwidth. You know, our good friend Will Sentowski has purchased some equipment that he could use, and you know, that was gifted to him. But there isn't a company at this point, which was something I was really holding on to before we started spending the money that we've gotten, the donations. Right now, there is about $400 or so in an account. That's the amount that I anticipate being usable after we pay, you know, fees for transferring to an actual bank from the Patreon system to PayPal, and then finally to us, or, you know, get a PayPal card. There's various ways. I mean, just note, it's a rough number. We have about $400 currently. And as far as I'm concerned, when I'm looking at it, those funds that you give on Patreon, or that you PayPal to Llama, I don't even remember the address right now. I believe it's llama@whatsyourent.com. Those funds, as far as I'm concerned, are Jason's to do what he wants with. We haven't done anything with them, or he has chosen not to do anything with them at this point for a couple of reasons. The first one is every time we move money, we pay fees in a percentage, and that fee level gets capped. So for us to move money over values of $500, we're paying a lower overall fee as a percentage. So we're kind of waiting until we hit that level, and then when we need something, we can move it, and we're paying less in fees overall. So more of your money actually gets used for the type of things you want it to be used for. But also because I'm not exactly sure what we want to do with it. The original source of that fund, as I had proposed it, was to pay for studio time to make more episodes of Llama Live in studio. Honestly, now that Jason has a Mevo, I'm not sure that he's going to want to use Camera Corner Studios. I'm not sure that that's an expense we'll ever really need to incur again. So then the next thought process was, well, dump the account, buy the camera. Sherry, you know, was gracious enough to purchase that, and we now have it. And, you know, he can be reimbursed for that camera from that fund. I'd be totally fine with it. Again, I'm not claiming ownership of those funds at all. And then the other thing that we've discussed that I hope the listeners out there are into, I personally would be, but please send me feedback, about merchandise. We've discussed having decals that you could maybe make a car magnet or a bumper sticker, or, you know, put them up at your office, put them on your laptop, whatever, you know, some decals for the organization or the group. We've discussed possibly t-shirts or other little goody things like branded pens or pencils or fun toys. There's all kinds of ideas out there of what we can do and, you know, plaster the logo on. And then for the people that don't want to just donate, there's actually a product you could purchase. And then, you know, the proceeds are still helping us. It's been recommended to us to form a nonprofit corporation. I don't think that's going to happen. And the big reason I say that is because there are aspirations to make this more than what it currently is. I don't think that GGBSOL as it currently is ever really going to be for profit. But the organization, the media company, if you will, producing the GGBSOL, I think has potential to be something someday. So to establish at this early point in the game that we're a nonprofit organization, I think would be stifling to what we're trying to do in the future. Now, that being said, we should probably look into if that affects our status as recognized press. I don't know. But that's where we are with the money to this point. Now, I do want to say, you know, this show does have an advertiser. Currently, it's Anchor, but, you know, that will change over time. It amounts to literally a penny or two for every three or four listeners. It's not a ton of money, but I do consider it a separate account. You know, there's whatever, 50 cents now, but it's not going to stay there forever. And that I would consider my own, because this show is entirely me taking the time, the research, the energy. Jason really isn't involved in this project, so I own Subthreads. the podcast, not the actual content of Subthreads. I don't own anything that you guys are writing. So it's very important for me to be thankful to the community for allowing me to use their materials. Now, you may have noticed this was a question that came up in the prior episodes. I have cited the names of some commenters, but not all. My thought process behind that is to name anyone that would be considered verifiable, right? If a city alder person says something about city business, I am going to consider that statement, unless it is clearly written as opinion, I'm going to consider that statement to be binding. Even if it is opinion, I might cite an alder person or, you know, the mayor or any representative or in some cases business owners. If in the context of the statement, who they are is important, I'm going to say that name. Now, if I am mentioning, you know, the commenter said this and it was opinion based and perhaps that opinion later gets corrected by another member with newly found facts, or if somebody's making a statement that we find out to be untrue, in the majority of cases, I'm not going to name the name of that person. People make mistakes all the time, and it's not my goal to upset anybody or make anybody feel less important or less correct or on blast, if you will, by participating. I am not giving props just to the people that are positive, though. I should make that known as well. I'm not calling you out to necessarily praise you or to put you on blast. I'm calling out your name to give context to the listener of who said this and that they are or are not a reliable source of information. So I hope that clears up that question as well. To those of you wondering, we do have an average of about 45 listeners over the last two shows, which is actually pretty impressive to me. I didn't do much to promote the show other than dropping it at midnight on New Year's Eve. I don't know how that works because it was at 12 a.m. So I guess it was New Year's Day at midnight, but it was morning. Anyways, I dropped the show. It was kind of a surprise. And then I did a follow-up episode the next week and we're now, skipped a week and here we are. So that's that. I should also mention, if you're really passionate about the podcast, I would appreciate if you supported us. You can do that at anchor.fm/subthreads. They have their own giving system where you can, I think it's like $3 or $5 a month or something. I didn't really look into it much, but if you wanted to give specifically for producing the podcast, there's a separate system for that. And it just falls into the same bucket as the podcast ads. So feel free to check that out if you want to, anchor.fm/subthreads, and you can complete online giving there. So now, just a quick summary of the things that I had written for episode 3 that I'm no longer doing. I had a story about the ordinance that Green Bay doesn't want you to leave your keys in your car with it running, which, you know, is now a moot point. It doesn't pay for me to read what I was going to read because it's been killed. I actually spent about 15 minutes going through the mayoral debate. Thank you again to Jason for live streaming that in its entirety. At the time I was doing my research, he hadn't uploaded the full video yet, so there was some skippiness and parts were missing. And what I was actually trying to do was going back to Nick Mortensen's suggested drinking game rules and giving you the scorecard for the game. But about 15, 20 minutes into the debate, I stopped because at that point we only had two drinks and it was getting kind of difficult to follow along with the 6 or 7 rules. But hey, let me pop over to the script that I did have for a second because I wanted to mention that drinking games aren't a new topic on the Llama. Let's see. Here we are. The first mention of drinking games on the Llama happened back on January 1st of 2018 from Erica Notsky, who was just remarking how TV news buzzwords like Weathermaker should become a drinking game, which oddly enough, Jason and our group of friends kind of had that going for a little while. Anytime we saw him on screen when he was working at the TV stations, we happened to gather once a week for karaoke. And the news would be on, and Jason would be working while the rest of us were out getting started for the night. And yeah, we had a little game, and it was fun, and we did things like that. But since then, additional suggestions for other games came from District 9 Alderman and owner of Madrid Tapas, or sorry, candidate for District 9 Alderman and Madrid Tapas restaurant owner Amanda Patterson, Brown County Supervisor for District 4, Eric Hoyer, the Green Bay Llama himself mentioned it twice, and I think since I did that research, it's come up a couple more times. So that would bring our count to, I believe, 8 unique situations where we've talked about Llama drinking games or news drinking games of some sort or another. I thought it was funny, though, because Mortensen had a couple of things that he put in his rules. I don't think I wrote them down, but yeah, it was fun to sit through and listen to that debate. And just, again, my general take, I'm not reporting news here. This is my opinion. My general take on that, that conversation was overall good. I think everybody has great intentions and great ideas for the city. Even if some of them might be a little bit far-fetched, Paul, but I'm encouraged by the crop that's out there. Now, I've said it before, I am not a City of Green Bay voter. I don't have a horse in the mayor race, but it's really cool to see the amount of leadership stepping to the table and how much of it was non-traditional. Straight up, there were 3 candidates. I'm not going to name names, but you'll all know right off the bat who I'm thinking. There were 3 candidates up there that were very calculated, prepared, political. They sounded like politicians that were doing the political motions to get that job. You know, not that that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think the position of mayor is someone that should be a professional, but it was also refreshing to hear the Paul, and I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong, but I went to school with someone. There was a Bushy back then. I think it's Boucher. But, you know, yeah, admittedly, a little bit out there, right? I don't know him, but I don't think he would be surprised to hear somebody say that about him, that Paul might be a little bit out there. But, you know, his heart is in the right place. He's got ideas that maybe someone should listen to and then come up with a way to execute. I don't think that what he was saying was as executable as he may think. But then, you know, you've got Nick Mortensen out there. He's talking about data-driven decision-making. He's talking about taking us to a, you know, different levels. And then I started hearing other people stealing his sound bites, which was really interesting to hear. I kind of wasn't expecting that. You know, Joe Moore out there was solid also. You know, I think the one note that I took from him was, you vote for him, you're voting for his family, and his daughter's going to be upset that, you know, being the mayor's daughter doesn't make her the princess. That was a nice joke, you know, kind of related to me and my current life stage. But, you know, the real star of the debates, I have to say, again, opinion show today, was the Green Bay sausage. Oh my God, Wendy, that was a hell of a parody video. And I think I even said this in the comment sections. I feel bad for the people that don't keep up with, you know, everything that happens online and in the sub threads and, you know, maybe some of it is an even deeper inside track than what is stated publicly online, but there were a lot of really, really tight jokes in that video. And for the people that are informed, that's probably the funniest thing they're going to see all year. And yeah, it's what, January 10th that you released that. It was great. And I hope that, you know, that's inspiration for you to keep working on good stuff, because it was awesome. Anyways, let's take a quick break. I'm going to walk away for a couple minutes. and a pre-recorded sponsorship placement is going to happen once I click the button right here. Okay, wow, well, we're back, and already this is going to be the longest episode, and I didn't even get to the topic that I really wanted to talk about yet, so we'll see how long this goes. Again, give me some feedback. Let me know if you like this looser format, because to be honest, this is a lot easier than the amount of research and time I'm putting into the other stories. If you like this, maybe I'll do it more. We'll see. It's definitely not the way I intended the show to go, though, when I conceptualized it. So what I really wanted to talk about today is probably the hottest story of the week, at least on the llama, and in some related ways, news in general, the Diocese of Green Bay press conference. Now, to open up, full disclosure, I am a shepherd leader at Green Bay Community Church, a non-denominational out in Howard. My history, I was raised in a Catholic family. I was a practicing Catholic. I got all the way through confirmation. As commonly happens, when I went away, I moved to Appleton for a number of years. And when I was away from my parents' home, I basically fell out of religion entirely, claimed myself as atheist, and spent a lot of time outside of church culture doing my own thing. Now, how many years later, probably about 15 years later, as I said, I am on a leadership team with a church. It's a volunteer position, but one with a little bit of responsibility. And the Catholic Diocese of Green Bay, as well as the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help in Champion, are two of my top clients at work. So it was very interesting to me when I got the call about 5-6 days in advance, or maybe it wasn't even. I think it might have been on Monday when I got the call. I'd have to dig through my emails that I don't have in front of me right now, but it was pretty short notice. It was under a week that this press conference was going to be happening on Thursday. And it was right after the news released that the diocese and their investigation into sexual abuse allegations was completed. So I knew, without being told, I knew that they were very, very likely to be connected events. So as I said, the diocese is a very big customer of mine. I've done a lot of work with them over the last few years, and I do have a relationship to maintain with them. So when I had gotten there, and my role was to provide the microphones. I was expecting there to be up to 5 people sitting at the table. When I got there, there were 3 chairs, so we set up 3 microphones. And then we had a mixing station, and then all of the TV crews that showed up, which I was not expecting that many. All the TV crews that showed up took the audio that myself and my partner were producing for the day. So I was very surprised when Jason and Jerry showed up. And it put me in a somewhat uncomfortable position. And he and I have talked, we're good. And I've talked to my contacts at the diocese. We're good. We all have a mutual understanding of what happened and what hasn't happened that would be assumed. But it was a little uncomfortable in the room, as I think it should be, right? This is a situation where the diocese is about to make an announcement that pretty much directly affects a very close personal friend of mine who is in the room. Now, Jason was asked to leave, which I'm sure, I'm not reporting anything new here. I'm pretty sure everybody that takes the time to listen to this podcast knows the whole story. And I'm just putting my 2 cents into it and trying to mention trying to reiterate the truth as I saw it. So Jason was asked to leave. by actually the manager of the person who's my primary working contact. I know her very well. Everybody's getting her name wrong. I'm not going to bother correcting it. That's not an important part. But she had asked him to leave. And as I would expect him to do, he, you know, protested freedom of the press. You're asking, why do I need to leave? The statement was that he did not receive an invitation. Now, Jason produced an invitation. He had an invitation, but they didn't send it to him. So here's where I really get torn. And, you know, I'm looking to my paper for notes for what I want to say. I literally wrote nothing to this point. So truly, from the heart. The diocese organized a press conference event that they knew was sensitive material. So they invited 10 media outlets to arrive. One of them completely missed the conference and entered the room after everything was completely finished. So they were given a copy of the video that I shot because, you know, hey, you drove all the way from Milwaukee. We'll give you something. They gave them the packet of information. If you've never been to a press conference, there's always a packet afterwards where, hey, if you missed what we said, here it is on paper. Or if you need more information, here's some extra details. So they got a packet, and then they got my footage. But that opening part before the meeting put me in a bit of a sticky situation that we're fine. We're fine. I've worked it out. The first thing I have to say is I don't believe it was right of the diocese to make it a closed event. However, I can completely understand after the incidents at the listening session where Jason, I wouldn't say confronted Bishop, but where Jason expressed himself to Bishop, and I thought it was done in a very kind and very comfortable way. Passionate, of course. Why wouldn't it be passionate? But I don't see anything wrong with the way he presented himself. It made people uncomfortable because people that don't know Jason personally weren't sure, first off, what they were going to hear from this conference or you know, what the message was about to be. They weren't sure how he would react to any kind of news that he heard. And on top of that, the diocese would not have let him in had he not been wearing a logo of a news station. So I understand and I get that it's just a jacket and he has it. I also understand how the diocese feels lied to and feels deceived. And I think that that's really where the anger came from initially with, we need to ask you to leave. Because it feels, whether it is or not, it feels like entrapment, where somebody that you have a history with comes through the door, in their eyes, misrepresenting himself as a member of the media that was invited. They don't know how he knew about the event, let alone had an invitation, which I don't know either. So they asked him to leave, which I don't think was that big of a deal. And Jason was gracious about it. And after a little bit of protest, which I'd expect from him, he did leave, which, you know, was great. But then Justine offered him to stay. Why don't you stay? We'll see how this goes. So she leaves the room. She's gone for a little while. Everyone in the room, all the press in the room is really uncomfortable at this point because the majority of them either know Jason or know of Jason from working with him or working with people that have worked with him in the past. And there's this long lull between when this actually happened and when the conference was scheduled to start. If I remember correctly, this was close to a half hour gap. And Jason was live for that whole time, which again, feels like entrapment to the diocese. You know, we weren't scheduled to start for a half hour. Sure, maybe you had a test stream going out, but to stay live to an empty room of people waiting for a half hour, to them, feels down, feels dirty. I would be very surprised. I have no knowledge of if they actually did this, but I would be very surprised if they didn't go back to an office somewhere and have somebody tune into the stream and see what was happening and if things were being said on that camera stream. I don't know. Once the conference actually started, the room was so full. If I remember correctly, there were like 9 cameras there. I was in the hallway outside. Everybody saw me for like 20 minutes standing by the door waiting for things to start. I just kind of ducked out that door and listened from the hallway once everything was going. But I guess where I'm going with this is that I'm kind of disappointed with the group in general. The Llama group took the Jason getting kicked out story and turned it into the whole story, which, hey, it's important. I believe in freedom of the press, and I believe that Jason should be treated as press. But if I look at it objectively, there was an invite-only event. He wasn't invited. He misrepresented himself. He has a history. There was no security on staff at the time. I can't fault them for wanting to remove him. Now, it's not a good look for them. It really isn't. But I would also argue that it's not a great look for Jason, who's trying to be perceived as a legitimate news source right now. And Jason, I love you. I've told you this to your face, and I hope you're not pissed off for me saying it publicly on my show. But it wasn't a great look in either direction. Now, I'll tell you what, it did mobilize more action. I'm not sure if the conference the following day would have happened. And my mind is drawing a blank on the other organization. I'm sure someone will fill me in and ream me for forgetting. But for the victims of pastoral abuse organization doing the follow-up conference the next day. And you know what? I completely support the message they shared also. I do think that there should be extensions on the investigation. I do think all cases should go to the police. I am behind Chief Smith putting out his press release saying, it doesn't matter if it's substantiated or unsubstantiated, we should be the ones to make that call. I'm with you. I also understand from a business perspective where the diocese is coming from. Imagine you owned a company and, you know, people were coming left and right, you know, over the course of what would it be, a 70-year investigation? There were hundreds of different priests that were called out. I understand trying to filter that before going to the public. You don't want all of your employees to be branded as predators, right? And for each of them to have, you know, allegations against them, even completely unsubstantiated, it is unfair, right? You don't want to just start releasing names and addresses and whatever else over allegations. They should be sealed and get to the police for investigation, is my personal opinion. Anyways, where I'm going with this, I want you all to understand that Jason and I are great friends. At least I hope we still are. I have an immense amount of respect for Jason Jerry as a person. I have immense amount of respect for Jason Jerry as a journalist. He did a couple of things that I don't agree with in that event. And I was torn probably for a good 4 or 5 hours after that meeting. Even after getting home at the end of the day and talking to my wife, I kind of rehashed the whole thing. And it made me think twice. But you know what? I am neither 100% saying that the diocese is doing everything perfect. And I think that they would admit that they're taking strong strides and trying very hard, but you know, there's certain protections that they do need to offer to the organization. Like I said, releasing the names of people that they believe are cleared, I guess that makes sense, right? But to have our forum and our people talking about what a witch she is, and how everybody in the organization should be removed from their positions, and how, you know, the Catholic Church just shouldn't exist. I think that's going a little far, don't you? I think that by taking Jason's eviction, or Jason being asked to leave, or the police escort, and making it such a huge story, we are just destroying the opportunity we do have to bring 15 highly likely sexual predators to justice. There are 15 names on this list of substantiated allegations, things that even the church is saying is likely. Do we hear that? Are we listening? We have 15 names of people who we believe have sexually abused children. Now, I didn't follow every comment in every thread, but the ones I did see weren't talking about that. And I'm a little bit upset. Like, we have turned this into a freedom of press. We've turned this into a cover-up. And I don't think it's right. I don't think it's appropriate. I think that, you know, regardless of the additional names being withheld, regardless of Jason being asked to leave, for many reasons that I could justify, regardless of those two things, the diocese has done something that they haven't done in the past. Could they do more? Yes. I honestly don't know if they don't have the information to investigate into the Norbertines. But even if they did, we should take these 15, not stop, not give up, not end the fight. But we should be celebrating the victory that is here, not just ignoring it and blowing up the other issue. I'm concerned about our group of people, our group of friends, our group of neighbors, the 1,400 people that regularly visit our Facebook page. I'm concerned that we are falling into the same groupthink, blind support pit that we get on all of these ultra-conservative and ultra-liberal broadcasts at the national level. Again, Jason, I love you. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that you're never going to find the justice that you deserve. I truly believe that. It's going to be a very, very strong fight to get any further than you already have. But I want to encourage you to keep going. Keep fighting. Even if it feels absolutely hopeless, so many people have heard your story and support you. Even people within the diocese believe you and support you and feel sick that they, in their capacity, are powerless to help you. So I'm not here to try and belittle Jason's experience. I'm not here to try and quiet anybody. I'm just trying to help people be a little bit more compassionate in general. Man, some of the things that I heard about the woman that asked Jason to leave initially, they were really rude and unfounded. She's a very, very nice person that had a job to do. And, you know, it sucks to do a job that you morally disagree with. Sometimes it happens. And again, we're forgetting all the people that are being helped or could be helped if people mobilize. Right? Hopefully my take is controversial enough here that you sound back to me. Because the last thing I want to do is record this 40 minutes of audio and then never hear a word back from what anybody says until it's, you know, a personal attack to me. My Facebook profile is public. I would say 90 to 98% of what I post on Facebook has no additional filtering on it. It's public. You want to see my kid, you want to see my wife, you want to see where I went for lunch today. It's public. I am out there. You can find me. You can talk to me. I even had somebody come into Camera Corner looking for me the other day. I had no idea who it was until they're like, oh yeah, here's the name. And I typed into Facebook, oh yeah, he's on the llama all the time, right? I can be found. In fact, I went to the Fox 11 comment section on a story earlier this week, and I don't even remember the guy's name, but he just replied to me. I made a joke. It was something to do with marijuana legalization. I replied with a joke, and he replied with, well, I just took a quick look at your profile, and that explains everything, so now I know where not to shop. I didn't really think a whole lot of it until I realized how public my profile is, and I said, well, wait, what personally was it on my webpage or on my Facebook page that tells you the quality of service you're going to receive from other people? Because if you come to Camera Corner and you're going to buy something on the retail floor, you're not going to work with me. I'm never there, right? I'm on the road. I'm at the studio. I'm not around. So I just said that. And then I kind of went off a little bit. I'm like, well, was it pictures of my autistic nephew that told you? Was it, you know, taking my daughter to Daniel Tiger? Was it my wife's birthday earlier this month? What was it? What was it that, you know, cued you in? And what really hurt the most in that moment was that it felt like my family was being blamed. It felt like the other people in my life were being attacked because I made a joke about medical marijuana. That's not right. People, we got to be nicer to each other. We got to think about each other as being real people with real lives and families of our own. And at some levels, you know, maybe there is corruption in the organizations. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know everything. But there are still good people that may not have the opportunity to see that. And it really hurts. It really does to hear people talked about the way they were this week. Maybe I'm just too much of a bleeding heart. I don't know. What do you guys think? I'd love to hear it. And I'm taking a huge risk posting this. You know, I am aware that the communications department at the diocese is aware of the llama and follows the llama. And I've said some things that may put me in a bad position with the diocese moving forward. I don't think that I've said anything. I don't think I've said anything that I would take back. I might go back and listen to this before I post it, just to make sure. Because it would be pretty devastating to me to lose my relationship with the people I know and that I've worked with, as well as the business, you know, from the church. But we're getting upset with today's people over crimes of the past. And I hope to God that their statement that there haven't been any recent allegations, I hope to God that that is the truth. At this point, I'm trusting them. And I know a lot of you on the llama are going to tell me that's a mistake. I guess that's all I've got for today. Honestly, I should have spent a little bit more time wrapping my thoughts together and coming up with a conclusion to the show, but just be nicer to each other, guys. And let's not belittle the greatness that this could be for the victims of those 15. it's terrifying that this could happen, that it has happened. That, you know, if we don't do something, it could happen again. Let's not let it happen again. Let's take the rope we've been given. Let's move forward. Until next time, I'll see you in the subthreads.